the last Aliyah of Parshas Bo begins with the mitzvah of Kedushas Bechor, Kadeshli Chol Bechor, Peter Kol Rechem B'vnei Yisrael, Ba'adim Uva Behema, Lihu. And the Gemara in the beginning of Masechas Bechor, on Daf Gimel, has a drasha on this, that Kol Bechor indicates that the animal has to be owned completely by a Jew, and if there is any ownership at all through a non-Jew, so then the animal is Pater. Gemara there also learns from the Pasuk in Kisisa something related to this as well, from the language of Kol Miknecha Tizachar. And there the Torah Tumim explains that the difference between the two is that that Pasuk tells us the idea that any non-Jewish ownership is a disqualification. And here we learn just how much, that even the smallest amount, even 1/1000th ownership would have that effect. So this is where the idea comes from, as the Gemara later on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph discusses, that this obligation can be avoided through the selling of part of the animal to the non-Jew, or part of the mother of the animal to the non-Jew. But there, the Gemara indicates that this is a bad thing to do in the avoidance of having the mitzvah take place and having the Kedusha take effect. Nonetheless, by the time the Shulchan Aruch talks about this, it says it's a mitzvah to do this, and that's because we don't really have a better option, because nowadays there isn't anything that can be done with an animal that has Kedushas Bechor, so therefore it's preferable to arrange for that Kedusha not to kick in, and that has become the practice. So there is an extensive discussion about this, because the Bechor Shor was of the opinion that there is an issue with using Mechiras Chametz when there is Torah law involved, because he considered it potentially to be a harama, which is, in his understanding, some kind of a false practice. And therefore, he rules that this is not something that can be used for Torah law. So here, if there is a problem with selling chametz, and that's considered to be a harama, so it would seem that the same logic should apply to selling a bechor, and nonetheless, this is permitted even though it's Torah law. So this is an objection that was raised against the position of the Bechor Shor by many, such as Nesivos HaMishpat and his Sefer Mekor Chaim and others. And for that reason, there were those who advocated other approaches to deal with the situation, such as Rav Pesach Frank in the Shuvas Har Tzvi. The Chassam Sofer, who was one who took issue with the whole premise of the Bechor Shor, he understood his position to be that the problem with using a harama in the context of Torah law is really itself a rabbinic enactment, and the rabbis didn't make this enactment in a situation such as this, where there really isn't any other alternative to solve the problem. However, the grandson of the Bechor Shor, Ephraim Zalman Margolius, in a Sefer Machne Ukinyan, which is all about defending his grandfather's position on this, he suggests that the Bechor Shor would not have had an issue with the selling of the Bechor, that his issue was limited to the selling of chametz, and really more precisely, the selling of animals before Pesach that were then fed chametz by the non-Jewish owners, because he thought the sale wasn't sincere. When it comes to the sale of the Bechor, he thought there wouldn't necessarily be any reason to not consider it to be sincere. Nonetheless, there were a number of poskim who felt that efforts should be made to guarantee that it is a sincere and genuine sale. So, for example, in the Sefer Aguras Ezov and in the Chutah Mesholesh, they advocated selling only a limb of the animal, and then, once the animal is eventually shechted, that limb should actually be given to the non-Jewish purchaser to make sure that the sale is completely genuine. The Shulchan Aruch Harav points out that a part of the advantage of selling only a small part of the animal is that this also allows for a much more realistic sales price, and that also ensures that it will be genuine. So all of this is possible because even the smallest amount of ownership removes the animal from the obligation of Bechor, and that's derived from this pasuk. In the next pasuk, so we read about the obligation of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the language is Zachor Es Hayom Hazeh Asher Yatzasim Mitzrayim Beis Avadim Ki Bechozik Yad Hutzi Hashem Eschem Mizeh. So here, the Rambam, Hilchas Chametz U'Matzah, Perek Zayin Halacha Aleph, tells us that there is a mitzvah to talk about the nisim and the flows of the Exodus, And he compares it to the mitzvah of Zachar Yisrael Mashabbos L'Kadsho. And he makes this association also in the Sefer HaMitzvos in Kufdin Zayin. And it's an interesting comparison which prompts a lot of discussion as to what exactly is the association between Zechiras Yisrael Mitzrayim and Zechiras HaShabbos. The Torah Tamima here notes that he thinks that the source of the Rambam is a Medrash that compares the two, but we still have to understand what the basis of the comparison is. The Maharal in the Sefer Gevuras Hashem in Perek Beis, he thought that the comparison the Rambam is trying to draw is that both of them require a zechira on the day itself. A zechira sashabbos on Shabbos, that kiddush should be made once Shabbos comes in his understanding, and that when it comes to Pesach also, the obligation is on the day of Pesach specifically. But even though he interprets the Rambam that way, he thinks it's surprising because he doesn't think this is true, that when it comes to Shabbos, so we find that there is this connection between Zachar and Shamar, so Shmiras HaShabbos is about Shabbos itself. But when it comes to Zechiras Yisias Mitzrayim, that's applicable every day. So there are other suggestions as well. The Or Sameach suggests that both of them have a notion of fulfilling the obligation of Zechira in association with either bread or wine, or matzah or wine. Rav Kasher, in his Sefer HaRambam Melechilta Derashbi, thought that the idea is to emphasize that just like when it comes to Kiddush, there's an obligation to recite Kiddush even if there isn't a child, even if there isn't a son, so too the mitzvah of Hagaras Yisias Mitzrayim is also going to be applicable even if there isn't actually a child to speak to. Others understand that the relationship is that both of them have an obligation to do something on a specific day, and that that should carry over to other days. And the general remembrance should continue even when that's not actually happening. In the Sefer Bashamay Mimal, in Parshas Bo, so he continues that theme by noting that both use a physical experience in order to reinforce the memory, and then this carries over into the days when we don't have that physical experience. And in the case of Yisias Mitzrayim, it's the mitzvah of matzah, and in the case of Shabbos, it is the Shmira Shabbos itself. It is the abstaining from malacha that creates the zechira in his understanding. And the Sefer Minchas Aaron, so he suggests that the association is that in both cases, the Rambam specifically, in difference from other Rishonim, is understanding the language of Zechira, like the Pasuk tells us, L'Kadisho, that the Zechira is not remembering the day, but remembering to sanctify the day. And in both cases, there is an obligation to sanctify the day with words. So the Pasuk ends here with the language of the Lo Ye'achel Chametz, that Chametz should not be eaten. The Rambam brings this language as the source for the fact that when it comes to chametz, even though one is only chayv kares for eating a kezayis of chametz, but there's a prohibition in eating any amount of chametz. It sounds like he's understanding that from the passive language here, that no chametz should be eaten. But even if that's the derivation, it's surprising, as all of the commentaries ask on the Rambam, that the Gemara in Maseches Yoma, the 8th Parak, has its own sources for the prohibition known as Chatzishir, that tells us that we're not allowed to partake of even a small amount of something that, when we eat a kezayis of it, is subject to a punishment. So why does the Rambam need his own source for Chametz on Pesach? So this is a major discussion in the Achronim. There are many, many answers. But among them, the Chasam Sofer, in his Drashos, and also in one place in his Tshuvos, suggests that that's because it connects to the whole flow of the Pasuk here, that the prohibition of eating Chametz is connected to Zechiras Yisias Mitzrayim, and we have to remember that at that time of the Exodus, we were at a very low stage, that we were at the bottom of the levels of Tumah, and we were as if we were not Jewish. And the Rambam also writes in Hilchos Malachim that the concept of Shiurim only applies to Jews. The idea that we have halachic measurements only applies to Jewish halacha, and therefore if we were ki'ilu, not Jewish at that time, so then we remember that by having the prohibition of chametz, which is built into this obligation of remembrance here in the Pasuk, applying to even the smallest amount of chametz and not subject to the shear of kezayis, at least as far as the prohibition is concerned. So this is the way the Chasam Sofer explains it. One could take it a little bit further and suggest that the transition into the Jewish people that comes after this is moving towards the whole halachic system, where there is the rule-based system and the notion of shiurim, and as Chazal often point out, that even though the difference between just below a shear and just above a shear is not necessarily so significant. Nonetheless, the halachic system requires us to use rules and measurements. And perhaps here this is highlighted that transitioning from the context of Mitzrayim to the context of Torah obligation is going to involve bringing in this whole system of rules-based observance. And it's similar to what we saw the father responding to the question of the Rasha, or not responding to the question of the Rasha, by emphasizing the importance of mitzvos maisios, of practical mitzvah observance. So here this is perhaps related also, the idea of the technical rules of halacha. And the next pasuk tells us that Hayom atam yotzim b'chodesh aviv, here you are leaving in the springtime. And Rashi comments, what, we don't know that it's this month, we don't know that it's springtime in Nisan? And he goes on to say, Elakach amr lehem, ru chesed shegamalchem, you see the favor that I did for you, shehotzi eschem b'chodesh shehu kasher latzeis, that I took you out at a time when the weather was good, it wasn't too hot, it wasn't too cold. And this seems very surprising, that one would think that if we're being redeemed from slavery after so many years of suffering, we're not really going to care what the weather is like. And this is such a crucial concept, that the whole notion of a leap year like we have this year is because we are obligated specifically to preserve this association of the springtime and make sure that Pesach always falls out in the spring and to keep the calendar consistent that way. So the idea of the crucial emphasis on this chesed, which doesn't seem to be such a significant part of what happened, if you're being released from slavery, the weather wouldn't seem to be the focus. And this was a topic of a sicha from the Rashi of Karen B'Avner of Goldbicht, where he explained there's a difference between chesed and rachmanis. They're two separate attributes. Both are crucial to the Jewish people, but they're separate ideas. And rachmanis is when you see somebody suffering and you feel moved to act and to do something because you are witnessing their anguish. But chesed is different. Chesed is more proactive, and it's not necessarily a response to visible anguish. And therefore, we highlight something here which wouldn't be such an obvious need, and is something that it takes extra forethought to actually think about. Not only how can I save somebody from bondage, but also provide them good weather at the same time. But that is what this midah of chesed actually involves. In Pasuk Zayin, so we have here the prohibition of Bal Yirah, Matzos Ye'achel, Eis Shivas HaYamim, V'lo Yirah Elocha Chametz, V'lo Yirah Elocha Se'or, B'chol Gvulecha. So this prohibition of seeing Chametz, and Chazal tell us that the Gemara Masech Pesachim on Daf Hei Midbeis, that this is specifically the Chametz that is yours, and you are permitted to see Chametz that's not yours, such as the Chametz that would belong to a non-Jew. So this is crucial to the practice of Mechir Chametz, and to continue that theme from the selling of Bechor that we mentioned a few moments ago. So the notion that we have, to some degree or another, accepted the practice of selling Chametz on Pesach, at least those who have accepted it. So here is the basis for it, the idea that Chametz that is not yours is not subject to the prohibition. And perhaps it could be explained in light of what we find, that here in our parsha we have here Ba'yira, earlier we have Ba'yimotze, and the Ran explains in the beginning of Pesachim, that the purpose of not owning chametz is to make sure that we don't come to eat the chametz. So if we are concerned that we may come to eat the chametz, perhaps we can understand that we'll be prevented from eating the chametz if we don't have any, but we'll also be prevented from eating it if the chametz doesn't belong to us, if we're careful about gezel and it's somebody else's property. So that will also keep us away from chametz. So if the purpose is that we are looking to keep ourselves from actually eating the chametz, so then perhaps this idea that we've come to embrace mechiras chametz can be seen in that lens. However, it is possible to suggest that maybe we can split the two halves of the concept here, the two different prohibitions, and suggest that it's specifically Bal Yimotze that is geared towards preventing us from eating chametz, and that's the language of the pasuk we read earlier in the parsha, which then continues to talk about the prohibition of eating chametz and the Isser Kares that is associated with it. However, when it comes to Baal Ira, perhaps there is an additional reason, and it serves a different purpose, and that is that if we're trying to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim and trying to put ourselves in the moment, as the Psukim here also are the source for that idea, so it's a contradiction to the message. If we have visible chametz at that time, if there is chametz that's present, it's going to undermine our ability to tell the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim and to place ourselves in that moment. And the pasuk continues, the next pasuk right after this, so perhaps that is to suggest that this additional prohibition of Baal Ira is in order to serve this purpose of not undermining the mitzvah of Haggadah. And the language here of this pasuk of Pasuk Ches of Bavur Zeh Asa Hashem Li, so here this pasuk is the source for the son Sheino Yodei Elishol, but Rashi tells us that the language here of Asa Li is a remez to the tshuva that is given to the Rasha, where we say Hashem Asa Hashem Li v'lo l'cha shilu ha'yisa sham lo ha'yisa kedai ligayel, based on the Mechilta. So it's striking that the answer to the Rasha is included here with the language for the Sheino Yodei Elishol. And there are some who suggest that the Vilna Gaon took the position that really the Rasha shouldn't get an answer at all. And that's what we saw earlier in the Parsha, that we seem to go right past him and just focus on the obligation to the mitzvah of Karban Pesach. And based on that, the Sefer Menachos Aaron suggests that maybe the reason it's not given in that context, the answer, but it is hinted to here, is because on the one hand, we don't want to answer the Rasha and to endorse his attitude, but at the same time, we want the other children to know that there is an answer. And the reason that we're not addressing him is not because there's no answer, but because it's not proper to address him with the attitude that he takes on. And he also suggests that maybe on some level, there is a Musar as well to the Sheinu Yodei Elishol. If we assume that Sheinu Yodei Elishol doesn't mean that he's really incapable of asking because he's too young or doesn't have the capacity, but rather this is an adult child who really could be asking but doesn't have the curiosity, doesn't care. So we try to transmit to him that this is something he should care about and it's important and he should be provoked to ask the question. Then in Pasuk Tes, we read about the obligation of tefillin. V'haya l'cha l'os al yadcha ul'zikaron b'inenecha l'man tia taras Hashem b'ficha. So here, this idea, some of the Achronim suggest that this may reflect an additional obligation, that the main mitzvah of putting on tefillin is taught to us in the Psukim of Kriyat Shema. And here, this represents an additional mitzvah, that there is a theme that tefillin is supposed to represent, is supposed to accomplish, that it focuses our attention on holiness and in God's Torah. And therefore, there is a discussion about the question of wearing tefillin for more than a minimal period of time, and the ideal of wearing tefillin all day. Nowadays, we don't do that because of the concern that we won't be able to maintain proper purity through the entire time, but the notion of an ideal of wearing tefillin for longer may come from the mitzvah of tefillin itself, or maybe it comes from a different aspect that's being conveyed here in this pasuk, that there is a impact that wearing tefillin has, that it keeps us focused on the Torah and directs our attention in that path. And without understanding, you can understand what the Mechilta has to say, that Osek b'Torah patur min ha-tefillin, which is hard to understand because we know that somebody who learns Torah isn't patur from mitzvahs that are personal obligations in general and is not obligated from the mitzvah of tefillin for sure. And he suggests, there's an essay about this in the Sefer Sheres Yosef of Shlomo Orman, and others have a similar path, that Mechilta doesn't mean to say that the main obligation of putting on tefillin every day could be subject to an exemption if you're involved in Torah, but it's referring specifically to this halacha, that there is a goal that tefillin is supposed to accomplish of keeping our minds focused on Torah, and therefore perhaps it's possible to also accomplish that without tefillin if somebody is indeed very focused and very much directed towards Torah study, so then that goal can be accomplished in and of itself of l'man tia taras Hashem v'ficha, and to recognize ki bi'ad chazaka hotziacha Hashem mi Mitzrayim.